Poll Research Poll, Pew Research, in 2007, 579 young adults between the ages of 18 to 25 were polled. Of the findings, 81% of the people said getting rich in their generation's most important life goal. Okay, which I think is kind of funny because especially in today's world where everything's based on fair, where all, everybody's supposed to be fair, fair this and fair that, and yet fair for other people, but don't mess with my fairness. But yeah. I thought that was kind of neat. This is a desire for the world to attain the things of the world or the flavors of the world. Howard Hughes, okay, this was an article from 1966, named the richest person in the world. His fortune is estimated to have been worth $40 billion in today's money. Okay. He dated various Hollywood actresses, Ginger Rogers, I don't know who Olivia
De Havilland.
Yeah, I don't know her, and Katharine Hepburn. In his prime, Hughes was a daring aviator, engineer who spurred science to new heights. He was an entrepreneur, set records, built the largest airplane. Anybody remember what the airplane was called?
Hercules.
Spruce Goose.
Oh, yeah.
It was made out of plywood, right?
It was called Hercules.
Yeah, that was a mocking term.
Oh,
no. It's called Hercules.
Hercules, but they named it the Spruce Goose. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the guy was on his way, as the world would see. In the last 20 years of his life, Hughes lived alone. Okay, even though he had the money and he had everything else, he refused to appear in public or to be photographed. He became a hypochondriac with an unnatural fear of germs. He refused to cut his hair, his beard, or his nails. And the only people who would see him would be his doctors and his servants. Those were the only people who saw him. And when he died, he was alone, obviously, and miserable. Miserable, absolutely miserable. So here's what he looked like in his prime. You know, here's a guy who had everything that the world would say that was available. You know, everything available. And then here's the Time Thing magazine of him at the end of his life, his secret life. And just grotesque. It just became completely deformed and mangled inside. I'm sure he was probably, battling demons and whatnot. That's right, absolutely. And so, but a person that the world would look at and say, holy cow, this is what I aspire to be. And so that having those things does not bring a person to the point where they are going to have happiness. So
I forgot to pass these out. The cheat sheets.
Oh.
Can you guys share? You two guys? Or you guys can share. How about you guys share and you can have that one? Okay, and the first one, we're going to Ecclesiastes 2.
And so it's a long one, so I'm going to go ahead and start reading it here. And we're going to be on page 636. You there? Good. 636. I might have you kids help me read a little bit of it. I'll read some of it there just for trying to get through it. 636. Chapter 2. Everybody there?
Almost.
636. Old Testament. Good job. Oh, you're looking it up in the other one, too. Okay. Right before Song of Solomon, or Song of Songs. Okay. Starting here in chapter 2, verse 1, okay, and I'm going to go ahead and read this. Said I in my heart, come now, I will prove thee with gladness, and look thou upon blessedness. But lo, even that was vanity. O laughter, I said, madness, and of mirth, what can I do? I sought out with my heart to cherish with wine my flesh, but my heart was to guide with wisdom even the laying hold of folly, until I should see which was blessedness for the sons of men as to that which they could do under the heavens during the number of days of their life. I enlarged my works, I built my houses, I planted my vineyards. I built me houses and planted my vineyards, and I made gardens and parks and planted them in trees of every kind of fruit. I made me pools of water to irrigate, therefore, Therefrom, the thick-set saplings growing into trees, I acquired men servants and women servants, and the children of the household were mine. Also possessions, herds, and flocks in abundance were mine. Behold, all who had been before me in Jerusalem. Very successful is what we're hearing, okay? This guy, he's acquiring a lot there, okay? The Solomon here that we're referring to, okay? I heaped me up both silver and gold and peculiar treasure of kings and provinces. I provided me singing men and singing women and the delights of sons of men and wives and wives. So I became great, increased more than anyone who had been before me in Jerusalem. Moreover, my wisdom remained with me, and nothing that mine eyes asked withheld I from them. I did not keep back my heart from any gladness, for my heart obtained gladness out of my toil, and so this was my portion of all my toil. When I looked upon all my works which my hands had made, and on my toil wherein I toilsomely wrought, then lo, all was vanity and feeding on wind, and there was no profit under the sun. Thus turned I to look at wisdom and madness and folly, for what came the men do more who cometh after the king, save that which already men have done. Would one of the adults read for me here for a few? We're going to read all the way through 26.
Then saw I that wisdom doth excel folly, as far as light excelleth darkness. As for the wise man, his eyes are in his head, whereas the dullard in darkness doth walk. But I myself knew that one destiny happeneth to them all. Then said I with my heart, as it happeneth to the dullard, even to me will it happen. But wherefore then became I wise to excess? Therefore spake I in my heart, even this is vanity, for there is no remembrance of a wise man more than of a dullard unto time's age abiding, seeing that already in the days to come all hath been forgotten. How then cometh it that the wise man dieth equally with the dullard?
Somebody, another doll, like to read 17 there, starting 17?
Therefore I hated life, for a vexation unto me was the work which was done under the sun, for all was vanity and a feeding on wind. Therefore hated I all my toil, wherein I was toiling under the sun, and that I should leave it for the man who should come after me, and who could know whether a wise man he would be or a foolish. And yet he would lord it over all my toil, wherein I had toiled, and wherein I had acted wisely under the sun. Even this was vanity. Then resolved I to give my heart over to despair concerning all the toil wherein I had toiled under the sun. For here is a man whose toil hath been with wisdom and with knowledge and with skill. Yet to a man who hath not toiled therein shall he leave it as his portion. Even this was vanity and a great vexation. For what hath the man for all his toil and for the striving of his heart, wherein he himself toiled under the sun? For all his days are pains and vexations is his employment. Even in the night his heart lieth not down. Even this was vanity. There was nothing more blessed for man than that he should eat and drink and see his desire for blessedness in his toil. Even this saw I myself, that from the hand of Yahweh it was. For who could eat, and who could enjoy so well as I? For to a man who is good before him hath he given wisdom and knowledge and gladness, whereas to the sinner he hath given employment, to gather and heap up, to give to one who is good before Yahweh. Even this was vanity and a feeding on wind.
Thank you. And so what we're going to look at there, you kind of read through there and you're like, oh, that's not a real morale booster. You're like going, holy cow, everything. So his dilemma is that all that he's doing and all his works and all his plantings and everything he's done to build up a wonderful thing, he's thinking whoever comes behind it, what's going to happen with it? And one thing that we have is in today's vocabulary, vanity has kind of a different meaning than what we're going to see here, because we're going to kind of do a little bit of a word study on the vanity. And it doesn't mean what we think, like vanity that we've are like, oh, you're so vain because you're so puffed up upon yourself and everything else. We're going to see that it means a different thing. And so as when you read this through there, especially in Ecclesiastes, the vanity that you're going to see is something a little bit different. And so it changes the thought of it, but it's to show that it's an emptiness, that there's a nothingness to it, that it's not worth the things that we would think of. So this is it right here. This also was vanity. And it's this word right here, 01892, and this is what it is right here. And so we're going to kind of look at this word, and it's hebal. Okay? And you see what it shows in there? It shows vanity, vain altogether, vapor, breath, vanity. Okay, and so what does it say? What does the word say about it? That our life is as a vapor, as a breath, that it comes and it goes. It's so short-lived. And so what happens with that is it's changing all the time. And so when we read this and you see this, it's like, holy cow, everything that I'm doing and all the toiling that I'm doing, is it all for naught? Is it all for the vanity that you see here, that it's just a vapor and a breath and now it's gone? Holy cow, you know, you're like going, how depressing, how demoralizing that you look at it this way. And what does it say there, where Yahweh talks about this here, that whereas to the sinner he hath given employment to gather up, heap up, to give to one who is good before Yahweh, or before Elohim. That he's even going to do that. He said even the people who are wicked, he's going to have them do the labor to go to the other people. Okay, so when you see this, yeah, we're like going, yeah, that's great. And that's why I say even with the Exodus, I'm like, oh, isn't that perfect? The people who went through the plagues, and the plagues were horrible. And yet, even with that, they still did this to get rid of them. Get here, take it, just take it. They gave it all. Companion Bible, when you look up this word here for the in Ecclesiastes 2, you'll see that it also says this, Hebal, and what he says is used of that which soon vanishes. Okay, and that is it. That's the vanity, that which soon vanishes. So the things that we do, when you see that, when you hear in the word that Yahweh says, you know, put up treasures that don't rust and the moth does not do, that's the opposite of this. Okay, the other stuff is a vapor or a breath or used of that which soon vanishes. And so that's what we're going to kind of look at here today. The theological workbook of the Old Testament, I copied out some stuff of it because I thought this was a pretty interesting little word study, and it was kind of interesting some of the points that they made. And this directly comes out of it for that word. They went after vanities and became vain. Okay, and they do use some of the NIV in here. Followed worthless idols and became worthless themselves. And two inexorable principles are illustrated here. One, every man takes on some degree of character, a nature of the God he worships. Now, people would be like, when you hear somebody who claims that they don't believe in anything. Well, they do. They absolutely do. And so the second characteristic of their false Elohim is that they destroy their worshipers. So what they are worshiping will actually destroy them. And there, it's nothingness, it's emptiness, but what they worship. And so for us, when we look at that, we say, when we're worshiping Yahweh, Yahweh builds upon us. It's not vanity. It's not something that soon goes away. For the passages in Ecclesiastes, and this is all comes out of the theological workbook, for the passages in Ecclesiastes generally leans to the translation of breath or worthless. The noun appears 21 times in the Old Testament, 71 times, I'm sorry, in the Old Testament. Over half of those, 36 times, it's used in Ecclesiastes, where it occurs at least once in each of the 12 chapters, except chapter 10. The basic meaning of Hebal is wind or breath. This is illustrated best in Isaiah 57:13. It says, the wind, or ruah, will carry them off. A breath, Hebal, will take them away. And in Proverbs 21:6, the getting of the treasures by lying tongue is a fleeting vapor. Okay, same thing. Now, everything else would be the vanity. So when we see that, we have to realize that the vanity that we're used to hearing about is the puffing up of ourselves, but we're talking about something that soon goes away, or a vapor, or something that's worthless or without value. Continuing there from the theological workbook, there are three basic categories or contents which the Hebal is used. And I thought this was kind of an interesting thing to kind of go over this word. It is used to designation for false gods worshipped by the people of Elohim or God, and hence it's usually translated in a context as idols. Okay, and it gives you a bunch of those lists. The second one here, the term represents the individual and sometimes exasperating sentiments of individuals, where you see in Isaiah where the servant of Israel says, I have labored in vain, I have spent my strength for nothing, and vanity, which is Hebal, in other words, for nothing, has spent it in vain, and that's what it's referring to. And Job complains about the brevity and uncertainty of life, okay, meaning that the value, what's going to happen, is it all just to go away? What's happening? And the third one here, okay, continuing in the theological workbook, is a cluster of references found in Ecclesiastes, the 36. These may be grouped into several subdivisions. First, those passages in which the author states his inability to find fulfillment in work. Okay? And that's what that's what we're seeing here. That's what we're seeing in chapter 2, okay? Both in the failure to be creative and in his lack of control over privilege, of free disposition of his possessions. This is vanity, okay? It's not vanity as we use it in today's English. That's what it is. That's what the word represents. And it gives you all of those here. You see all those right here, that it gives you those references, okay? Secondly, are those verses in which the author struggles with the idea that the connection between sin and judgment, righteousness and final deliverance is not always direct or obvious. This is an anomaly about life and is a vanity. And it is vanity. And so that's where it was also with Job that we referred to. And it shows it here in Ecclesiastes as well. And then the meaning of Habal here would be senseless. Thirdly, there are verses in which the author laments the shortness of life. This is vanity. Life is its quality is empty or vacuous, as unsubstantial, and it is a quantity of transitory. Okay, I know a lot of stuff in there that we'll just go over this, but this is the difference of it with the vanity. I think it's really important to see that and understand that people mistranslate what we're actually looking for. And so when we look through here, you read that, and you're like going, wow. Sounds kind of depressing. And so you're like, how many times have you got to that point where you're going through and you're doing all the motions and you're like, oh man, I'm doing everything that I think I'm supposed to be doing right, and yet what the heck is going on? And is there any change? When I go away, when I pass away, is there going to be any difference? Is anything going to carry on, or is it just going to go back to whatever it was? And so this is what Solomon was going over, and it's things that we go over as well. Continuing from there, rather than the above observations being final conclusions about life by the author of Ecclesiastes, perhaps they reveal something of his method to conceal his premise. He may be attempting to demonstrate man's inability to find meaning of life unaided by divine revelation and interpretation. This solo quest will always end in futility. I'm like, well, that sounds very good. I'm like, well, now that's all out of the theological workbook. But I'm like, well, that's what it is. And so when we do this, what becomes is when you see all the people going out and they're doing these charitable things that are not Yahweh or Christ-driven, and that's vanity. And so if you told somebody, that's just vanity, they'd be like, what? What are you talking about? I'm giving, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And it's for naught. It's for naught of any cause. It really doesn't do anything. Okay. And so if it's guided, and that's what I like about this here, that if it's revelation interpretation, solo quest will always end in futility. Go flip over a few pages here, because Ecclesiastes in chapter 12 is the end. And why don't one of you kids that's already there?
Isaiah.
Okay, why don't you read 13 and 14, or you can read one and somebody else can read the other if you'd prefer. But these are the last two of the book of Ecclesiastes. And so when you see us, we started off in chapter 2, where you read it and you're kind of like going, boy, this is just dread. You know, you're like going, holy cow, this isn't encouraging. You're not building me up. So this is how it finishes in the book. So read 13 and 14 for me, would you?
The conclusion of the matter, the whole let us hear. Toward God be reverent, and his commandments observe, for this concerns and maintain for every
work will God. Will Yahweh bring unto judgment with every hidden thing, whether good or evil?
That's it. And so for crying out loud, when you get to this, this is how the book closes. So as he's going through and saying these things, these thoughts he's having, it's like going, who has not? Any person that's been in the Word has at some point or another have gone through that, where they're like going, God, I'm getting worn down by this. What's happening? Mm-hmm. I've done so many things that I thought were to build up, and now I look at it and I'm like going, is it all just going to go away? And so this is how he ends it. And I'm like, well, that's perfect. This is where you come up and you end up on the high point, that every hidden thing, whether good or evil, is Yahweh will bring into judgment. I'm like going, absolutely, absolutely. That which soon vanishes. Do not only focus on paradise, okay, which is important, that we need to focus on paradise, but there's a journey that we're taking in the midst, and as we're taking this journey, Yahweh may have special things for us. So you have a goal to meet when you get there. You see this so many times in the Word, where you have a goal where I'm going to this place, but along the way, All these things will take place as you're walking in Yahweh's will and doing what he's telling you to do. And so if you're just focused on the end result, getting to the very end, you may be missing these things. So it's important to have both, that we're focused on that to get to where we're going, and at the same time be watching and reaping all the benefits and everything that Yahweh has for us every day. Because he may have something, you know, you think about this. A person who was raised from the dead, do you think they would be pretty blessed with that? I think to myself, would I love to be the person to raise them from the dead? Holy cow, does that bless me? Are you kidding me? I'm like going to be able to do something like that? And the person who gets raised from the dead, boy, it's a win-win situation. It's a three-win, because Yahweh gets to show, hey, look, here's my power, here's my glory, here's what I can do. And so when we walk just looking towards the end goal, we miss those things because we put on the little blinders and we miss the things around us. And Yahweh wants us to be prosperous in every day, to worry not about tomorrow, but for today. Take into what's for today, to be given for us for today. The journey is full of opportunities for those who are looking for them. Who has this one? Okay, how about a child who has not read yet? Let's have one of them. And let's give it a minute here.
Melania?
127, verse 1. Call out a page there. 597. Are you there? Okay, how about somebody who is there? Kay's there. Why don't you go for it, Kay? Why don't you go to the next one, sweetheart?
Okay. If Yahweh build not the house, in vain have the builders of the it toiled. Thereon, if Yahweh watch not the city, in vain has the watchman kept awake.
That's it. Very good. That's it. So, and you read that and you're like, well, that's something completely different. So we're going to look at this one here too. A little bit different vanity that we're talking about here. Okay, if Yahweh built not the house, in vain was the builders of it toiled thereon. In other words, the things that you have built, if they are not built on the principles and the foundation of Yahweh and Christ, it's in vain. It's of worthless. It's nothing. It's of naught. Yes, people might enjoy it while they're here, and then it's gone. Same thing, I love that here. If the Yahweh, if the city, if the watchman, you think about the big empires, for crying out loud, the 180,000, where they're crying out, there's no way we can win. And I think about that even now. You know, people say, well, you know, something came, if our government turned against us and became evil, there's no way we could go up against tanks and we could go up against these things. And I'm like going, boy, that sounds exactly like what they said as they were looking at 180,000 people down there. Okay? They're looking at it going, there is no way. There is no way. And yet the same way, I'm like going, really? And that's exactly what you see. If Yahweh watch not the city, in vain hath the watchman kept awake. In other words, it's a waste of time. I don't care how big your city is. I don't care how big your fortress is. It's a waste of time. It is vanity. And this is the vanity here. It is called Shav. Okay? And you see this here. Again, when I'm showing this, this is not the English use of what we would use as vanity. And so you see it here. Emptiness, nothingness, emptiness of speech, lying, worthlessness of conduct. Okay? Go to Corinthians here. 1 Corinthians. Okay, Melania, are you there, sweetie?
Yeah.
Okay, let everybody else get there. Call out a page for us.
179.
Thank you. 179 in the Old Testament.
New Testament.
There you go. Somebody's paying attention.
That would be...
what book would that be?
Genesis or Exodus?
Yeah.
Probably Genesis.
Yeah, probably. I'm going to say probably past that. It might be Leviticus or something.
Well,
now I have to look. And it's going to be Numbers. There you go. Numbers. Okay. Anyways, go ahead, sweetheart. Sorry, a little side thing there. Everybody there? Page 179, 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58. Down at the bottom right.
Become ye
steadfast.
Steadfast.
Immovable.
Super abounding in the work of the Lord at all times.
Next page. Still keeps going.
Knowing that you're told. Is not vain in the Lord.
That's exactly it.
And numbers.
So, That's all right. That's exactly what we're talking about, that your toil is not in vain when you are working for Yahweh, when you're working for Christ. That what you're doing, whether or not you're getting beat up, whether or not you're feeling that you're being worn down, your toil is not in vain. Okay, and we're going to look at this one here. Now, obviously, this is a Greek, and so this is another version of it here. But look here what we're looking at here on this one here. Kenos, I'm not sure how you would pronounce that. Empty, devoid of truth, of places, vessels, which contain nothing, of men, metaphorically destitute of spiritual wealth, metaphorically of endeavors, labors, acts, which result in nothing, fruitless, without effect, without purpose. Okay, different from the vanity that we look at and what we hear. So when we read the word, we have to realize what's being talked about there is it's not a puffing up of somebody in the attention that we're looking at it. It's something different. It's of no value. And you know in Colossians 3:17 it says, "And whatsoever you may be doing in word or in work, all things do in the name of the Lord Yahushua, giving thanks unto the Divine Father through Him." In all things. So even in that, when you're in the job, and you know, we look at it over and over again, how many days did Yahweh tell us to work?
6 days.
Six days. That's exactly right. 6 days. And so it was not that we were supposed to, okay, I've done this and now it's my time to sit back and do nothing. It didn't say that when you turn 50 years old, when you turn 60 years old, when you turn 65, that you still didn't work and you still didn't labor. Your labor may change, but you were still to be out doing it. And that labor was not to be in vain if you were doing it and you were working all under Yahweh and under Christ. Here's an interesting thing about Colonel Sanders that I came up with that I saw. It was kind of interesting. When he started out, he had one restaurant, and they built a highway. As the highway systems were coming in, the highway routed around from where the old highway was. So you know how they have all the business highways that go through the cities and whatnot and slowdowns? Well, they routed the highway around this so that they would bypass. So he was going to lose a lot of business because the highway was going to bypass where it used to be coming through. And so he was distraught, didn't know whether he should get out of the business, what he should do, and he wanted to do it. And he loved to do it, and he wanted to still be able to serve Yahweh. And so he sat down before and he says, "Yahweh, if you increase my portions, if you increase my things, I will give to you generously of everything that I do, that my business will be with your business. We will work together with this." And his business, as everybody knows, the KFC took off. Okay, Church of Christ that he belonged to benefited greatly. It got huge. Okay, he gave lots of contributions. He did a lot of Bible colleges and gave endowments, huge endowments to the Bible colleges to train them. And he also gave money and the tuition to pay for lots of people, lots of men that wanted to go into the ministry. He was paying for them to do it. Okay, so I thought that was kind of an interesting thing that to be able to do that, to be able to partner. And so his labors, he thought, I may just have to go out of business. I may just have to stop. And no, I'm going to partner this. I'm going to work this, and I'm going to work this through Yahweh. And so I kind of threw something in funny in here, because when you hear Colonel Sanders, you can't help but think of this.
I hated the Colonel with his wee beady eyes and that smug look on his face. Oh, you're going to buy my chicken. Oh.
Dad, how can you hate the Colonel?
Because he puts an addictive chemical in his chicken that makes you crave it fortnightly, smartass!
Sorry, I love the Colonel, but I thought that was great. I go, that's good comedy there. Every time I think of the Colonel, I buy it and I say that line in my head. Let's go over to Proverbs there. Call out a page here, kiddos.
6:10.
All right. Proverbs 3, yes. Yes. Almost done. Proverbs 3:9-10. So, I'll tell you what, there's two of them there. One kid read one and one kid read the other. 9 and 10 of chapter 3.
Isaiah read 9.
I'll read 10.
How? 9.
Honor thou Yahweh with thy exceptions, and will the first truth of all thine confusion.
Okay, and who's reading 10?
Daniel.
Oh, Elijah's.
So shall thy storehouse be filled with plenty, and that with new wine shall thy vats overflow.
Okay, and here's where we look at it and we say, yes, here is the positive. Here's where we look at it. Here's the partnering with Yahweh. Here's what happens to it. Honor thou Yahweh and thy substance. The substance is thy wealth, thy riches. Okay, so does Yahweh want somebody who is going to be diligent to him to have those riches? Absolutely. He wants to be able to put those into it so that he can help other people and be with other people to financially support them. Honor thou Yahweh with thy substance, thy riches, thy wealth, and with the first fruits of thine increase. So shall thy storehouse be filled with plenty, and the new wine and thy vats shall overflow. And this is the promises of that. And so yes, is that... Now, here's what I would look at, and I would think to myself, you know, people always talk about being hungry. Oh, I'm feed the hungry, feed the hungry. You know, 2 weeks ago, I was working to the point where I was so hungry I thought I was going to pass out. And you know what happened after I ate? I completely forgot that I was hungry. And until I sat down and started going through this, I had forgotten about that. And so I'm like going, so does it really matter? No, at that point, it made a huge difference to me. But Yahweh's saying that I will bless you and I will incorporate you. And yes, there's going to be some tough times. And during those times, we grow, we build, but as we are diligent and we're working for Yahweh, that He is going to fill those storefronts and fill those things up. And guess what? Does that matter in the end picture? Not really. Not really. It does for us while we're doing the journey. But our goal is the end, but along the way is to reap all those things, and that's what Yahweh wants to do. He wants to bless us along the way. And so that we don't look at, oh boy, this is all in vain. This is all toil for me. That we look everywhere and we look around for Yahweh to be able to fill those storefronts, fill those places for us. And that is all. So I will close here. That's right. All right, I'm going to close here, guys, and then have a word for anybody who's watching now or later. Yahweh, we thank you for the words you give. We thank you that we are able to come before you, that we do toil for you, and that everything we do for you, we do, it is not in vain. That what we are doing is we're laying hold of your will and your promises that we are blessed today and that we are also rewarded greatly in paradise. And we thank you for that, that as we go about, that we are energized, that we also energize each other as the body, as when one is down, that we lift them up. And that we bring them back to their nature of being able to be productive and continuing and laying hold, putting a shoulder back up against the will, that they may continue to forge ahead and keep going even in times of difficulty and in times of uncomfort and pain. But we toil not in vain for the things we do for you. We thank you for that. We thank you for the words that you give and that we're able to just speak these things. And so I just speak this all through Christ's name. My children, come before me as a lantern, carrying a lantern before you, that as you come before me, that I will light your path, that I will illuminate the things before you, that I will show you the desires that I have, the places that I call you to go, that you are not walking alone, that I am with you. That remember that as there are many messengers that are out there and available, that you are being watched and that you are being seen, that you are not alone, that you do not forge ahead by yourself, but that you have mighty hope with you as they are watching and seeing what's happening, that they take great delight when you are doing the things that are well pleasing before me, that they take delight that there's celebratory occasions as they watch the things that you do and call amongst each other, that they may be able to see these things and lay hold of this, watch what this is about to happen. My will is unfolding as you go about doing these things. So come before me watching and studying the things that I've given you. Put yourself in my ways and not against me, and ask yourself if this thing bring me closer to, will it bring you closer to me, or will it separate me from you? And when you ask these things of everything in your life, you will know what you need to disregard and what you need to cling to and remove. So come before me knowing that I am there for you as you come to me, that we may be able to meet together and intercede together. Amen.